This is episode 88 of the 99 Forever podcast. I'm Eric Friesen, and my guest tonight is making his fifth appearance on the podcast. He covers the WHL and the Edmonton Oilers prospects for HeavyHockey.com, Spencer Pomody. Spencer, good to have you back on the show.
Oh, it's great to be back. Thanks for having me again, Eric.
Yeah, for sure, man. I appreciate you taking the time on Easter weekend to talk some Oilers hockey and WHL.
Yeah, nothing better.
And it's a busy weekend in the Dub, right, with the playoffs getting underway now. Have you been able to watch any of it so far, or are you just kind of keeping tabs on it on Twitter?
I was watching a bit of the Brandon and Moose Jaw game that was in overtime tonight, but mostly just kind of keeping tabs. It was a busy weekend for them, back-to-back days.
Yeah,
and they'll get
sure.
going Tuesday.
And, I mean, it started Thursday night. I think my hometown Saskatoon Blades were the only playing the PA Raiders was the only game in action on the first night of the playoffs. And unfortunately they dropped that one, but bounced back with a winning game two. And this is of course the first episode we've recorded together since the Young Stars Classic back in September. So I just wanted to start off by asking, how was the scouting season for you overall? And how many WHL teams did you have a chance to watch at Rogers Place this season?
It was a good season. There's no Connor Bedard in the league or in this draft to say even that comes through every once in a while, but it was a good, I saw probably any team that came in. I was at most of those games. My thing was with the scouting season this year was, like I said, without Connor Bedard. So you don't, first is still kind of up in the air, and I enjoyed that a bit more this season than having, you know, a solidified one. So it kind of puts it up to debate more in your head and with everybody else around there talking too.
As opposed to one player who was pretty much guaranteed to be the first overall pick since he was, what, 14 years old?
Yeah, exactly. Like, you knew he was going to be the first WHL player, first player off the board since, yeah, he was 13, 14 years old.
And I remember when the Regina Pats came into Saskatoon, even for a regular season game. This would have been right around this time last year. And I believe it was a sellout or close to it at Sask Place for the game. When the Regina Pats came through Edmonton last year, was there a similar turnout against the Oil Kings?
Oh, yeah. It's crazy whenever he was in. It's every building, though, for how it was. Scouts were every scout, every bunch of teams, and then just because it's a cheap ticket to go see one of the, well, hopefully one of the NHL's future stars.
Yeah, probably the cheapest you'll ever pay for a seat to get to watch Bedard live.
Those are $20. Now you got to spend at least $100.
And you wrote a great article last summer on your top five NHL prospects from the WHL, including Bedard, who was the first overall pick in the draft, and as well as the first WHL player to get selected first overall in the NHL draft since Ryan Nugent-Hopkins back in 2011. And obviously there isn't a generational talent like Bedard in this year's draft class, but how does the 2024 crop of WHL first-time draft eligibles compare to last year's?
It's a tough comparison to make almost, because the 23 class was just awesome. It was a great, one of the deeper ones in my mind that I've seen come through. This one is a little bit lighter. Like I said, there's no Bedard, but there's still great top talents like Caden Lindstrom, center in Medicine Hat. He's going to be probably a top 10 pick, I'd say, at minimum. Berkeley Catton, the center out of Spokane, he has a chance to be a top line forward. So there's no kind of generational piece, but there's a lot of building blocks in this draft. Jerome McGinley's son, Tish, he'll be a good top six forward for a team down the line. But yeah, it is just kind of missing that one standout star, I believe.
No, for sure. And when you look at the names that you listed, do you see several of these players going in the first round or even the first two rounds of the draft?
Yeah, I think, like last year, they'll have another good appearance in the first round. I think at least you're looking at minimum of five, I would have to say, again this year. But last year was a a good one was six. I don't know if they touch six, but I definitely can see them reaching five first round picks this year.
And when you think of the population in Ontario and Quebec and per capita, how many players there are that are coming through, I mean, that's pretty impressive for the WHL if they're able to produce five players out of the top 32.
Yeah, they, in the past few years, even just, I don't have any stats, but to memory, it seems like they have been providing way more NHL players in recent history. And even when I was watching some of the OHL, I just feel like the WHL does kind of play like a closer to pro style game. They may not have, like, Ontario's known for all their stud talents in the NHL, but the Western Hockey has been, they have been coming up, and I think it's going to keep going.
I think that's a good assessment by you too. And I think, you know, whether these reputations are accurate or not, like the Quebec League, it always seems to be the highest scoring league. It's probably a little more wide open there. The Ontario League, I think, still produces the best talent. And again, largely that is because of the massive population in Southern Ontario and just how many kids are coming through the hockey system year after year. But like you said, the WHL always has a reputation as being one of the tougher leagues, the more physical league of the three. So I can see what you're saying there with your assessment that it's a little more physical, a little more pro style, and maybe gets these players prepared for the rigors of an 82 game season in the NHL down the road.
Yeah, that's exactly what I see. Like, I haven't watched much OHL, but when I do, it's always sometimes in those games it's just 8-7 or at least, and it's just there's not a lot of pressure being put on. But yeah, they still, the pure stars, the force of their population, they'll always produce great talent.
Yeah, and for me, I pay attention to the OHL more when the Oilers have prospects playing in the league. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it was great when they had the past 2 years, Matvei Petrov playing for the North Bay Battalion, and he had back-to-back 90-point seasons and a top-five finish in league scoring last year. So when you have a player like that, it's really exciting to follow, and especially to see him having success in arguably the best junior hockey league in the world. I think it's fair to say that the OHL is still that. And now this year, I was hoping to watch Bo Akey a little more. Unfortunately, he got hurt early in the season, and that was disappointing because in his draft year, he got off to that great start, and then he sort of took a little bit of a step back in the second half of the year when Brant Clark was sent back to junior and took his spot on the top power play unit. But I was hoping that this year he would be able to pick up where he left off and really have a big year offensively, but unfortunately, you know, lost an important year of development. So I'm hoping that next season he'll be able to come back fully healthy and sort of show what he's capable of in his 19-year-old/20-year-old season.
Yeah, I think nothing, but he's even during the preseason, he was such a standout. He's not a worry to me at all.
I mean, he played in that one preseason game in Edmonton and didn't look out of place at all. Now, in that game, you are going up against often a heavy minor league opponent, especially for the road team. They're not going to send a lot of their main players. But the fact that at 18 years old, he was still able to hold his own against minor league pros and a few NHL players to boot, I mean, that's pretty impressive.
Yeah, like just showing you can stick with the pros at that level, that young of age, is a big step and a tip of the hat, too.
And he didn't get picked to this year's World Junior team, but I'm hoping that next year, in his final year of eligibility for the tournament, that he will be able to crack the squad.
Yeah, he'll definitely, I think, get a look. Hopefully an invite, at least.
I think an invite for sure. Yeah. And I mean, like, the season will be 3 months old by the time World Junior Camp rolls around, so we'll probably have a pretty good idea by late November, early December, if he's going to get invited or not. But you would think that with how dominant of an offensive player he was to start his 17-year-old season, that he would be able to pick up at least at the same offensive rate in his 19-year-old season or better, even after this injury.
Yeah, I'm expecting a big step. Yeah, even after the injury, it's got some time to heal. He at least gets the off season to continue working, and then just be prepared for a big year.
For sure. And just taking it back to the WHL now, who do you think will be the first WHL player selected in the 2024 NHL draft and why?
See, I go back to last year. It's fun this time. There's no Bedard
that's the guarantee. Yeah.
So it's way more open. I think the two that are in talk, it would be Caden Lindstrom and Berkeley Catton. I would say between those, I do see NHL teams liking Caden Lindstrom a bit more. I think he's listed at 6'4", and he plays center. So he's a big, smooth skating centerman. He's still extremely young. He just got back, came back in the playoffs. He's fighting an injury, but he plays a good... He's not one of those big guys that just uses his pure size to rough around or play a power forward kind of game. He's more of just pure finesse. He plays, he hits all that, plays the big man game, but it's the small part of his game, the hand eye he has at his size, the reactions, the quick twitch muscles, he can get around defenders. It's incredible at somebody his size. And then Berkeley Catton is more of a playmaking. I think he'll play wing in the NHL, a bit smaller. I don't think he's quite 6 feet yet. Needs to gain, I think, another step, and I think that's why teams will be a little bit leaning towards Lindstrom, is just because his skating's phenomenal at 6'4", and Berkeley just doesn't have that extra gear yet, but he does, he does everything else exceptionally well.
And I mean, those are two qualities that every NHL team would covet, is size and skating ability. Mm-hmm. And if you look back historically, size, even 25 years ago, would have been the priority over the ability to skate. But as the games just continue to get faster and faster every year, and teams want all their defensemen to be able to move the puck either with their feet or with their stick, looking at the skating ability that you described there, do you think that that's even a bigger asset and maybe why he would get picked?
Yeah, I think it's one of the big reasons. Skating has become such almost a need. You can't be, everybody can go fast now. There's not many players that get drafted even. You're saying, oh, he's a bad skater. Right. They're all almost average skaters now. And it's just about being able to take that next step. Can your game handle? It's okay if you're an average skater, but once the speed gets quicker around you, can your game do the same? And that's why I think the skating will always, it's something you can always fall back onto. Where some
the game
players
just continues to get faster and more skilled year after year. And I don't think we're going to see this trend stop anytime soon.
Exactly. And you always need it. Always need speed on your team.
And aside from the skaters, which WHL goalie do you think has the best chance to hear his name called at the draft in June?
I think first one off the board, I believe, will be Dawson Cohen from Berkeley Catton's teammate from Spokane. I think he does have the best chance. I know goalies are all voodoo, we were talking earlier. Yeah. But him or the goalie out of Red Deer, Chase Wuzki. Chase Wuzki was he was a bit of a standout for Red Deer this year. But their crop, ever since, even last year, they had Carson Bjarnason, who was a standout goalie and will be, I think, a good NHL goalie. Other since Tossa, they haven't had that stud. But I think Cohen will have the best chance going first.
And all right, let's talk about Gavin McKenna now. And he was taken first overall by the Medicine Hat Tigers in the 2022 WHL draft. And this season, McKenna finished 12th in league scoring with 97 points in 61 games as a 16-year-old. First off, is McKenna a lock to win the Jim Pidgett Memorial Trophy as WHL Rookie of the Year, in your opinion? And secondly, just how special of a talent is this kid?
Yeah, there's nobody touching that trophy other than McKenna. He was He was an absolute monster every time, because he's a teammate of Caden Lindstrom. He's on Medicine Hat, and every time watching that team, they were, both of those guys would just stand out. Even like on a power play, like Gavin, that puck was running through Gavin McKenna on a team that will probably have two top 60 draft picks this year. There, it was run by a 16-year-old. It was incredible.
How like, many viewings did you get this year live at Rogers Place?
In total, or of just like Gavin of
just
McKenna?
Of just McKenna.
I think I got two or three. I missed one game while they were here. So I think they were here twice. So I think twice I saw him live. And he is, yeah, he is just special. Everything. He's like already 5'11". He skates like the wind. His one-timer is crazy already for his age. But also just the shot in stride that can release it off any angle. He's the real deal.
And the crazy fact that I found out this season is that he's actually a cousin of Connor Bedard.
Yeah, they are. I believe it's not through blood. I believe through it's like marriage. Yeah.
But still, the fact that yeah. those two guys, I mean, wow, that's, I mean, a pretty proud family to have those two both at the same dinner table at Christmas, you know, talking about their hockey accomplishments. While McKenna isn't even eligible for the NHL draft until 2026, do you think he could lead the WHL in points as early as next season?
Oh, it's such a good question, because I could see it. He is, nothing's out of reach for him. But then there's also returning players like his teammate Lindstrom and Berkeley Catton. I think he'll take at least one more year in the WHL, and I would have him as my bet to be the lead in point scorer.
Well, let's even expand on it then. If he can put up 97 points in his rookie season in the Dub, now those numbers alone would get you almost a first round pick if you were in your 18-year-old season. So yeah. What kind of numbers could we be looking at 2 years down the road when he will be the projected first overall pick in the 2026 NHL draft?
I think you're going to see kind of like a Bedard season of like 130, definitely over 120. He's going to be hitting, he'll be sniffing the 140 points, I bet.
And he'll miss a couple weeks due to the World Juniors that year too.
Yeah, that's why. Yeah, he won't, like, I don't think 150 if he played.
Yeah, I mean, if you're going to miss the entire month of, you're basically going to miss the entire month of December and the first week of January. So pretty hard to win the scoring title if you do make the team. But I mean, I think that playing for Team Canada would probably be the priority for him over winning the scoring title. But still, I mean, I think he probably has a chance to win it at that point, even if he does go play for Team Canada. And that would probably be his final WHL season, I think you would agree to.
Yeah, I don't see it. Yeah,
he's going to be one of those ones at 18 who's ready for the show.
Yeah, I think he'll be gone. He's just so damn good right now. I can't even imagine what 2 years of development will look like for him.
So as far as players that you'll get to see next season coming to play the Oil Kings, would he still be at the top of your list of players you're most excited to watch?
Yeah, 100%. He is so much fun. And oh, this is a good note, a little segue. Landon DuPont, I saw on Twitter, he just freed.
Yeah, you tweeted
Friedman.
That. You quote tweeted. I saw. Yeah.
Yeah, that he should be getting exceptional status. So that I'll put him high up there on my list as well. He is an incredible right shot defenseman.
Now, even though he's been granted exceptional player status, that isn't a lock that he will go first overall. But do you think that he still will be the first pick in the Bantam draft this spring?
Yeah, 100%. He's a special talent. I think he'll challenge. He'll be Makar-like almost, I think.
I've even seen some people say that he is ahead of Makar at the same age, which is remarkable to think.
Yeah, like he is a
didn't
special
Didn't Bruce Kerlock say
talent.
That?
Yeah, he did.
Yeah,
replied to the tweet. He He is,
and
just
he knows prospects very well. So I mean, if Bruce is saying it, that's
smart,
that's
man.
Yeah,
yeah, he's gonna be. I can't wait. He led their, I believe he led their U18 league that has a bunch of first round picks, and he's a 14 year old.
Yeah.
So, like, it's he's
has he
and
had
he's
his
a 15th defenseman.
Birthday yet? Yeah. The fact that he's a defenseman makes it even more ridiculous, but.
And no, he's a May 28th baby, so he's still 14.
So he, still 14. Wow. That's incredible. And do you know offhand who has the first overall pick in the Bantam draft? I don't have that in front of me.
Yes, Everett won
the draft. Oh, okay.
I believe it's actually the Kamloops Blazers pick they traded for Olin Zellweger. So
I heard a story, like, you know, WHL draft picks get traded all the time. There was something about one of the picks that was traded in the deal for Stuart Skinner was passed around through multiple organizations and ended up being the pick that landed Connor Bedard.
Oh, really?
When he got traded from, it was either
Swift
the
two.
It was either Lethbridge. That trade.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was either from Lethbridge to Swift, or was it a draft pick that exchanged hands before Skinner was even drafted and moved through multiple organizations before going to Regina? So I'm trying to remember where I heard that, but I thought that's so remarkable that those two would be connected in that way.
Yeah, that's neat. I never knew that.
And I mean, the WHL is different too, because in the OHL, I don't think you're allowed to trade first round picks.
No, yeah, in the O, that's why it's always just a bunch of second round picks and then players. Yep. That's something always unique.
You'll see something like a stud player like Shane Wright will get traded for like 8 draft picks, and some of them aren't until 2027. They always load up because they can't trade the most valuable piece. And I don't know why they have that rule. Maybe it's just to ensure some level of competitive balance throughout the OHL, that because certain teams like the London Knights are always going to recruit better than other organizations. Mm-hmm. By just, at least this guarantees that every team is going to have their first round pick. But I mean, in junior hockey, when teams are loading up to go for a deep playoff run, I mean, that's sometimes your most valuable piece, is that first round pick.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know why they do that. That'd be something.
I think it's to ensure some level of parity throughout the league, because you would figure that certain organizations would just be trading their first round picks year after year to just constantly stay competitive. And I mean, some organizations rarely are even at the bottom, despite not being able to move picks. All right, the 2024 WHL playoffs got underway on Thursday, and there are 7 games going on as we speak. Spencer, when you look around the league, which first round series intrigues you the most, and why?
That's a good question. Am I the one I'm looking forward to the most right now is the Red Deer Medicine Hat one, just because Caden Lindstrom, Gavin McKenna. And I think they're like, Medicine Hat's a young team right now. And I do believe the road through the WHL will be through Medicine Hat. And I just, they're young right now. They're playing a Red Deer team that I had higher expectations for. And I think Medicine Hat can kind of give them a little upset and run for their money. And I'm excited to see how this series plays out.
And because they do have as much high-end talent as you said, I mean, could this be just the start for them? And as you know, the next 2 years of McKenna in the WHL, is that a real chance for them to be contenders for the title?
Yeah, I think just even with McKenna, Lindstrom, they have two younger guys too. They just drafted twins, the Ruck twins. They're called Liam and Marcus. They are going to be great WHL players. They've drafted well. They got Andrew Basha. He's going to be at least a second round pick this year, I believe. They got, Thomas Mercek. He's a center that's going to be another draft pick. And they just have studs everywhere right now and studs coming up. I think just road is through them.
Definitely. And what is your prediction for the WHL Championship Series? And who do you have winning the Ed Chenoweth Cup this spring?
I think I was just going to go with the 2-1 seeds because they do make sense and they're great. But I think your Saskatoon Blades, I think they're going to be there. And then I think they're going to play the... Yeah, I'll say Portland always finds a way. So I'm going to go with Portland. I think they'll play against Portland. And Saskatoon will win it, I think.
Oh, I'd love to see that, man. And, you know, the Oil Kings have won, I believe, 3 championships since they came back to the WHL in 2007. And so, I mean, the city has experienced quite a bit of success at the junior hockey level. And, you know, I would love to see some of that in Saskatoon because this is actually the Blades' 60th season and they've never won a WHL championship. They were in the final 3 times in the 70s, twice in the 90s, and they appeared in 2 Memorial Cup finals as the host, once in 1989, the year I was born, and also back in 2013. And I actually had a chance to go to some of those games. That was a really exciting tournament to go see. Aside from the Blades being in it, Nathan McKinnon's team was there with the Halifax Mooseheads and Seth Jones with the Portland Winterhawks. So I got to kind of see those two guys right before the 2013 NHL draft when they were projected to go first and second overall. But yeah, it's been tough for the Blades. They haven't had a ton of success in my lifetime as a fan, but you know, in the early 2010s, they had some pretty good teams, won a couple regular season championships, and one year they bowed out in the first round in a stunning upset. But if they were able to win a championship, that would be huge for this city. And, you know, I've followed the team very closely all season, and they've loaded up, and I really like, you know, bringing in guys like Fraser Minton, who really helped this team, and Washington Capitals, Russian prospect who was big for them as well. So when you look at guys like that, aside from, you know, Trevor Wong and Sidorov, this is a team that looks poised to go on a run. So I'm glad that you have them going all the way to the final. And like you said, hopefully winning it, because that would be great for the city to get their first title. And Spencer, it's been a tough go for WHL teams at the Memorial Cup over the past decade. A WHL club hasn't won the tournament since Edmonton back in 2014. Do you think the Blades have a real shot to win the Memorial Cup this season, or do you not have as close of a read on how good the OHL or QMJHL are?
I don't have the best of reads on the O and the Q right now, but I like the Blades are a great young team. Like, they are a great junior club. I think it is weird that the WHL hasn't won it since 2014, and I don't know why. It's funny, but I do think the Blades got a great shot. Like you said, they loaded up. They have all the talent. I think it just comes down to almost a little bit of luck.
Yeah, and I think part of it, once again, comes back to something we talked about earlier, and it's just the population. There's just so much more hockey being played out there, so many more kids. So when you have that many more kids, you're going to have that much more high-end talent as well. And sometimes I think the WHL clubs just are overmatched, especially because it's, what, a 22-team league? I think that if the WHL was maybe more like a 16 to 18 team league, you'd see deeper rosters across the dub, and then they might be able to contend more with some of the top teams from Ontario and Quebec. But when you have nowhere near the population that Ontario has, and you have to spread out the talent we do across 22 teams in the WHL, it just, they have a hard time, I think, hanging with some of those real top contenders in the O.
Yeah, that's an excellent point, actually. Yeah, never really, once you break it down, like, yeah, like, there is a ton of teams.
Yeah.
That is the one bad thing.
And I mean, that's just a reality in the NHL too. Like, I mean, if the NHL was a 24-team league, we would probably see deeper teams across the league as well from the third and fourth line. And I mean, with the NHL continuing to expand, who knows how that's going to go in the future. But at least, as we said, hockey players across the board are becoming more skilled year after year, faster, bigger, stronger, more talented with the puck. So Let's hope that there will be enough elite talent to fill out these rosters as the years go on. And Spencer, it was another rebuilding year for the Edmonton Oil Kings, who finished near the bottom of the Eastern Conference standings for the second consecutive season. However, they had a 34-point improvement from a year ago. How large of a step forward do you expect the Oil Kings to take in 2024-25? And what are the biggest reasons for your optimism?
My biggest reason to have some optimism going into next year is just everybody takes a step. Everybody's getting a bit older. Sure, they lose a couple guys. That's Ty Nash, Skylar Bruce, and LaJoie. He'll be gone. I just think, other than that, losing those three, everybody else just gets a year older. Like Gavin Hodnett, he gets another year in him. I think he's going to have a great season next year. Marshall Finney will be a year older. He had a great year. Another one is, like, they're young guys. Presley Koerner, he got a few games in this year. And I think he showed well in a few of his performances. And I think he'll be able to provide something for the team. Another year of Adam Dzeko as well. It's just about getting older, more experienced, getting developed now.
And sometimes just getting those extra reps is the best thing for any rebuilding team, regardless of what level it's at. Mm-hmm. You mentioned Gavin Hodnett a second ago. He led the Oil Kings in scoring with 70 points in 61 games this season as a 17-year-old, which is an encouraging sign. He's also eligible for the NHL draft this summer. Spencer, what type of an impact do you think Hodnett could have in his 18 and 19-year-old seasons in the WHL?
I think he's going to have massive impacts for the Oil Kings, in the WHL, hopefully for the Oil Kings, because he's a fun player. He's a first and foremost, like, 70 points, 61 games. That's what he does. Is he's a point guy. He's always been at the near the top, or at least above average with his peers. And I think for when he's 18 and when he's 19, expect nothing but the same. Maybe 80 points, 90 points next year. And maybe if the Oil Kings, like Joe Aginla, is coming in, if maybe in a 19-year-old season, Gavin Hodnett gets you 100 points, that would be fun.
For sure. And Hodnett is a bit of an undersized player at 5'7" and 158 pounds, but it's not as big of an issue as it was in the past in hockey, is it?
Yeah, no, it's not. Some people still kind of are afraid of little Kings, but I think just as long as you have the skill, you can play with the guys. It is going to be tougher at that size, but if you play with a bit of bite, like Yamamoto was a great example, yeah. I should say, even in the WHL.
Former Spokane Chief.
Yep, he was great. And it's still tough for the little guys, but there is way more paths being paved with small players in the NHL.
And I think if you look around the NHL right now, there are more star players 6 feet tall or shorter than ever before.
Yeah, 100%. Like, I was going to say, like, Johnny Gaudreau is a good example, but he's kind of...
He's taking a step back.
His move, yeah.
But in fairness to him, even though we're by no means Gaudreau fans, he was... probably a top 10 offensive player at his peak a few years ago. So that's just one example of a player who can come in and have a big impact. You also mentioned Joe Aginla, and he showed some flashes of his Hall of Fame father's scoring ability with 5 points in five games as a 15-year-old this winter. How much of a difference maker do you think Aginla could be for the Oil Kings next season?
Next season, he'll get his full season in. I think he can definitely provide you with some offense. I think he'll give you maybe not first line production, but decent second line production, something maybe about 45 points in 61 games, something around there, 40 points. And I think that'd be a great rookie season for him. It would help this team. They could take all the 40 point guys they could get. But I definitely could see him having a great year, especially with how he played this year. That shot is for real.
Do you think he has some of the ruggedness that his dad displayed throughout his Hall of Fame career as well?
He wasn't as like scrummy and stuff at the games I saw him live, but he definitely lays his body out. He's not afraid to get it, like just throw the body, do what he needs to do on the forecheck, but he's not nothing. I don't see any glove dropping soon.
Yeah, I mean, and players don't always have to emulate their fathers or uncles when they come up through the ranks. You know, sometimes you'll see the odd guy who can do a little bit of it, but like I think of like Max Domi, you know, he will drop the gloves on occasion, but he's not a pure enforcer like his dad Ty was back in his playing days. He's a much more skilled player, and I mean, it's pretty hard to live up to the legacy of Jerome Iginla, but the fact that he has two sons that are playing in the WHL and have the chance to one day play in the NHL, I mean, I think that he's going to be pretty proud of that, regardless if they become stars or not.
Yeah, his sons are the real deal. I mean, Tiz should be a first round pick this year. He's going to have...
Yeah, you mentioned a top six forward in him.
Yeah, they're going to have some fun dinner table talks.
Yeah, definitely. And just to wrap up on the Oil Kings, do you think they have a realistic shot of sneaking into a playoff spot next season, or is that maybe still a little much to ask?
I think they would have to be a big surprise. And I think, but with Grayson Sochin, like, a lot is possible. He is an excellent player at this level. I think they can get in, squeeze in just a tiny little bit, like the eighth or seventh spot.
And probably run into one of the contenders and get bounced in four or five games. But
yeah, somebody that has loaded up completely and get spanked, but it's good for these young guys.
Still just the chance to at least scratch and claw their way in. And then maybe in 2025, 2026, we start to see an even bigger progression as they continue to maybe become a little more of a playoff team.
Yeah, exactly. Like, the goal next year is to put yourself in that conversation, play some more meaningful games down the stretch, feel that, develop into that. And this, like, they got some more picks coming. And so hopefully around the time, 2 years, we see more of a mid-pack, even 4-5 seed.
And that's just the cycle of junior hockey, isn't it? How many draft picks did the Oil Kings send out when they were loading up back in 2022 compared to, or I guess their championship season would have been 2021, was it? It was 2022 they won, right?
Yeah, I think 20, was it 22? Yes. Yeah, 22.
Yeah, because last year was when they bottomed out after their championship run, and then this year they took a bit of a step forward, as we talked about. But they sent out a ton of draft picks when they were loading up, and now they're sort of at the other end of that, where they're acquiring those picks and starting to rebuild through the organization. And that's just how it goes in junior hockey, isn't it?
Yeah, it's the life cycle. You, especially in the W, you send out all your firsts, all your prospects for your chance when you're ready, and then before you know it, those kids players are too old.
Yeah. You get them for 4 years and you try to win something while they're there, and then it just, you pretty much have to start over and build through it like that. And that is often a good thing too, I think, about these junior hockey clubs, is that it's not always one team staying at the top. You have a chance to turn your team around. And if you're an organization like the Oil Kings, who've been very successful over the past 15 years, they've done that, where they've won championships and then rebuilt and won another championship.
Yeah, exactly. Like, and it's lucky because it's Edmonton. It's great facility for the kids.
Probably they have the best in the dub.
Yeah, they have a ton to entice.
I can't think it'd be one that would be better. And obviously, like we said, they appeared in three consecutive WHL finals in 2012, 2013, and 2014, won two of them, and then made it back 8 years later and won another championship in 2022. So a bit of a gap, you know, between there, but still the fact that they were able to have multiple championship seasons after going without a WHL team in Edmonton for about 10 years. I think the Edmonton Ice left in 98, and then the Oil Kings came back in 07. So like I said, since they've come back, they've probably been one of the more successful franchises in the league.
Yeah, and I'm thankful for it, because it's nice to see the top players come. Like, I get a lot of viewings of them because they're here. We acquire like Dylan Gunther, Caden Gooley. Like, they get when they're good, they go for it.
And during the second intermission of today's Oilers game against the Anaheim Ducks, Bob Stauffer revealed that the Oilers will sign Oil Kings defenseman Mark Lejeune to an entry-level contract on Sunday. Lejeune was the third undrafted free agent who either plays or played in the WHL to sign with the Oilers in the past 2 weeks, along with Connor Unger and James Steffen. Spencer, let's just start with Lejeune. He played four seasons with the Tri-City Americans before wrapping up his WHL career with his hometown Oil Kings this winter. What type of a player are the Oilers getting in the 20-year-old left-shot defenseman?
Well, he's big. He's 6'6", 223, and it's fun because he does get involved offensively, but his main thing is getting his puck out of his own end into the transition, and he makes a good first pass for a big guy. And he had 26 goals this year as a defenseman on a team that was, they weren't good. They kind of turned it on, but they weren't good. He finished with 14 points in his last 10 games. He gets involved offensively, but it's the frame you notice. He's not the fleetest of foot, but heavy shot from the point. Not afraid to make a move down low. I think you can see a good AHL player in him one day.
Do you think that's really his ceiling? Like, this isn't a player who is going to have NHL potential, but someone who can sort of fill out a roster spot in the minors.
Yeah, I would love to see him become a stud in the NHL, but I do see him filling out like a roster spot in the minors, being a good AHL kind of player consistently.
And on March 18th, the Oilers signed goalie Connor Unger to a 2-year entry-level deal with a cap hit of $860,000. And despite going undrafted in both the WHL Bantam Draft and the NHL Draft, Unger steadily improved throughout his WHL career and took a massive step forward in his development with the Brock University Badgers this season. Spencer, Unger really is proof that perseverance can pay off, isn't he?
Yeah, he's a great story. It's awesome. Even if you look at his numbers, like we were talking earlier, he was a backup for most of his career.
For the bulk of his WHL career.
Yeah, like he's never played a ton of, like he never played more than 38 games. But, and like he had his only season in the WHL under 900 was in 2019. And like he's had great years, great, good numbers. Although, like we said, backup role, little asterisk, and then he steps into Brock University and just takes over. Like a 932 save percentage is incredible. I think he could be a little surprising. He has that little, like, that never quit gene, the just persevere. I'm gonna persevere whatever you throw at me. And I never don't doubt that sometimes in people.
Yeah, I think that's huge to have a player like that who can, you know, come through and not give up despite going undrafted and just kind of continue to work at his game and hope that eventually it's going to pay off. And it did, as he earned his first NHL contract. And like we talked about, spent the majority of his career as a backup, gets to play a starting role late in his career with the Moose Jaw Warriors. I think he even won a playoff series and then ultimately moved on to U Sports Hockey, where he had a 26-0 record this season with a 2.15 goals against average and a 932 save percentage, as well as three shutouts. So pretty impressive numbers there, and led his team to the OUA semifinal, where they were unfortunately upset, but still a first place club that went all the way to the semifinals of their conference. And, you know, now he's going to be headed down to the Bakersfield Condors, and I would suspect that he's probably going to spend the next 2 to 3 years down there just working his way up. You look, Olivier Rodrigue just signed a 1-year two-way deal, because next year he was no longer he was going to be waiver eligible. He could no longer be sent down without having to clear waivers. So because of that, it gives the Oilers the flexibility to recall him and send him down whenever they want. And I think that they're going to be testing him out a little more to see if he's ready to handle the backup role as early as next season, with Calvin Pickard probably still penciled in to that spot, assuming he re-signs. And like I said, with Stuart Skinner locked in as the Oilers' number one goalie until at least 2025-26, the crease, I think, is set in Edmonton as far as the starter. But throughout the organization, we're seeing a lot of other goaltenders with competing for spots. Like, you've got Ryan Fanti, who put up solid numbers with the Fort Wayne Comets in the ECHL, and you have to wonder, could he be ready to handle the backup job in Bakersfield next season? With Rodrigue, you know, potentially, you know, splitting time, I guess, between the NHL and AHL. Jack Campbell's probably going to get bought out, so that will open up a spot for Unger in the AHL to hopefully get some playing time with the Condors. And even though he hasn't played a single game of pro yet, this is a guy who is, like we said, such a good story. And you'd like to think that eventually he could work his way up and play for the Oilers. Do you think that he could eventually climb the ladder and get a spot with the big club?
I you never know. Like, he's only 22, still young for a goalie. I do picture him starting more games in the ECHL early on in his career. But Stuart Skinner started there. A lot of goalies start there.
Right.
I think it's going to be, it's definitely a tough climb because Stu is still so young, and Olivier Rodrigue has,
I mean,
been
what a season he's had.
Lights,
I mean,
out.
You could probably say season and a half where he has put up outstanding numbers at the AHL level. So I'm glad that he agreed to a two-way deal, because it's a mutually beneficial deal for both sides. I mean, the Oilers, like I said, they get the flexibility to send him down if they want, or recall him and not have to worry about the waivers. And also, that deal opens up the opportunity for him to get more playing time in the NHL. And if he thinks that he has a good shot, then he will eventually work his way into that spot. And I could see a scenario where those two are the starting and backup goalies for the Edmonton Oilers. And that would be huge, that two goalies that the Oilers selected in back-to-back drafts end up becoming their number one and number two organizational goalies.
Oh, it would be great. Like, that would just work out perfectly. That's why I think Unger will have more of a problem, even if he does pan out pretty well, is because...
Just because he's got both those guys standing in his room.
Yeah, like, Olivier Rodrigue is not going anywhere, so...
No, and I mean, I'd love to see him get some games in the NHL. I mean, if the Oilers couldn't improve their position anymore down the road, I think their final two games of the year are back-to-backs on the road against Arizona and Colorado. Like I said, if you can't climb the standings anymore and you're pretty much locked into that second place spot in the Pacific Division, that might almost be an opportunity to get Rodrigue into a game.
Oh, I'd love to see that. It would be neat. But they're usually, even in the past when that would be nice, they usually try to just focus more on playoffs. We're going to play our game. We're going to prep. prep.
And I mean, the team might still be pushing hard. Like I said, that last game of the season between Edmonton and Colorado, it could come down to the Art Ross Trophy between McDavid and McKinnon. And not that that is the primary focus for McDavid. I mean, I know it's not. He is dead set on winning a Stanley Cup and any individual honors he doesn't really care about. But I still think the team would try to get Connor that sixth Art Ross Trophy if he was tied with McKinnon going into the last day. And they would still be wanting to put their best effort forward in that game against Colorado. So you might want to play the starter that night and give McDavid every opportunity that he can to win it. But and also, I think you want to have that good feeling of beating another contender going into the playoffs, a good confidence boost going into your series, especially if you're playing Vegas in the first round. I think beating a team like Colorado would be, like I said, a good confidence boost there. But no, it's a positive sign for Unger. I think it's a good story, and I hope that he gets plenty of playing time in the AHL next season. And on March 21st, the Oilers signed right winger James Steffen of the Portland Winterhawks to a 3-year entry-level deal with a cap hit of $870,000. And Spencer, a lot of Oilers fans will remember Stefan's dad for one of the biggest gaffes in NHL history at Rexall Place back in 2007. I'll never forget that game and that goal specifically when he was playing for the Dallas Stars and missed a wide open breakaway, which came down the ice the other way. Jarrett Stoll sends the puck down. Ryan Smith picks it up off the half wall and backhand pass to Alex Hemsky all alone in the slot, who deeks to the backhand and tucks it in for the game tying goal with just seconds left on the clock to send it to overtime. It's one that I think any Oilers fan from that era will have etched in their memory forever. But the younger Stefan has had a career year in his 20-year-old season in the WHL, scoring 50 goals and 101 points in 67 games this season. What's your scouting report on Stefan, and do you think that he has an NHL future?
That Stefan misplay is all time. We still found a way to lose that game, but we don't
got
talk
a point
about
though,
that.
Right?
Yeah, exactly.
You know what? It's one of those ones where actually the tying goal is more memorable than the game winner. And I think it went to a shootout even.
Yeah, I believe it did go to a shootout.
It was right around my 18th birthday in January 2007. But yeah, that's one that, you know, I just remember so vividly where I was sitting watching that game and everything about it. So yeah, but like I said, now his son is on the right side of on that rivalry. So, but yeah, sorry, go ahead.
James is a shoot first type of player. Absolute rocket of a release. Great. Like, he's a good passer, underrated kind of in that playmaking set. The one thing it's an act with a lot of players is the skating isn't quite what it should be. He's not the biggest of players either at only 6 foot. So he does need to kind of pick up extra stride. He's a little too hunched over, doesn't get back to his start position too quick.
You can play in the NHL as a smaller player, but most of the time the smaller players have really good hands and are quick skaters. So if you're missing one of those key important skills, it makes it a little tougher to crack the show, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's that extra thing where if the skating's not up and you're not like 6'3", it is kind of tougher. But he, like I said, he's got a great shot. He's got sometimes he does kind of fumble the puck under pressure if a forechecker's on him. But if he's skating at you, he can make a play. He's not afraid to try different stuff. He's creative. But yeah, the one thing I always come back to is that shot. I think the shot is what would carry him on to the next level. As for an NHL chance, I think maybe he gets a few games as like a bottom, like a fourth line, bottom six kind of player. But I think he definitely needs to add the step first. The step will just unlock so much for his offensive game and also help him defensively, where just get into the right spot at the right time.
And these two players might not be exactly identical, but I want to get your thoughts on this. Do you see him sort of similar to a guy like Carter Savoy, who has that one elite skill, and that's the ability to shoot the puck, but there are some of the other elements of his game that aren't quite there that's held him back from progressing and making it to the NHL yet. Do you see these two as similar type players and might have a similar path as they try to work their way through the pro game?
Yeah, that's a pretty good comparison. The one thing though with Carter is I do believe he's just a little bit more skilled, a little bit better of a passer. He might have, because his skating hasn't looked too bad lately, he might have a little bit better of a step. But yeah, I do think that's kind of the same path where he has the one elite shot, but kind of needs to work on everything else in the toolbox to get to where he wants to be.
And Savoy really did work on that. I remember hearing the story that he took his training and nutrition really serious in the off season and cut some weight and just was really committed. And I think he actually got hurt 2 years ago in the Young Stars Classic, and that kind of set back his development a little bit. But I mean, look, he's scored a hat trick in the AHL before. This is a guy we've seen rip the puck. Look how big of an impact player he was at the college level during his 2 years with Denver. So you know the talent is there, but it's just like, I think Stefan's going to be one of these guys who's going to join the Condors, and he'll probably need 2, maybe 3 years to really see if there's something there. But you don't want to ever count anyone out either, too, because you look at a guy like Zach Hyman, who didn't break into the NHL until he was almost in his mid-20s. And when you look at his AHL numbers, like, they were decent, but they weren't really a good indication of a future NHL star player. So, like I said, I'm hesitant to ever write anyone off, but yeah. I think this is another good bet by the Oilers organization, because they don't have a lot of draft picks over the next 2 summers. Mm-hmm. So by signing some of these players who are a little bit older prospects, like these guys we've talked about are all 20 years old or older, they're coming in a little more developed, and it's not like a raw 18-year-old who still needs a couple years of junior before they're able to break into pro hockey. These are all guys who we envision will be on the Condors next season.
Yeah, and I, like, whenever you can get free skill, just take it. Like, it's just a contract slot. That's all it takes up. And you never know. Like, maybe something pans out. And even if he's a good AHL player, you need a good AHL team. So yeah. I'd take it.
And this is a strategy that I think the Oilers are going to have to continue to employ, especially during McDavid and Draisaitl's prime years. Because, look, their first-round pick from 2022, Reed Schaefer, was traded in the Matthias Ekholm deal. That trade has obviously worked out great for the Oilers. They traded last year's first-round pick as well in that deal, and then this year's first-round pick went out the door in the swap that brought Adam Henrique and Sam Carrick to Edmonton from the Anaheim Ducks. So if this is going to be a trend that continues, where the Oilers are sending out their first-round pick year after year in order to load up for a playoff run, they're going to have to sign some of these free agents who kind of went undrafted if they're going to restock the cupboards in the prospect system.
Yeah, exactly. You're going to have to find diamonds in the rough. Like, that is the only option.
And speaking of diamonds in the rough, I just want to close out the show tonight by asking you about an Oilers prospect and WHL alum who continues to climb the organization's depth chart, and that's Max Wanner. Wanner has 5 goals, 15 points, and a plus 11 rating in 63 games as a rookie defenseman in the AHL this season. He just turned 21 earlier this month. Spencer, could the former Moose Jaw Warrior turn into another late-round gem for the Oilers?
I think he has a good shot to play some bottom pairing minutes in the NHL. I mean, he skates extremely well for his size at 6'3", 185, and he keeps adding to his offensive bag. Like, he's not afraid to move the puck down low. He'd take an exchange on the wall. He'll take it in, drive the net.
He scored a great shorthanded goal against the Calgary Wranglers. Sorry to interrupt you, but that was a... If you saw that play, he chipped the puck off the boards on a 2-on-1 and just fired a slap shot home from a tough angle, too. And I don't think that he was really thought of as someone who could produce offense when he was drafted. He was more looked at as like a stay-at-home guy, but the fact that he's able to add that element to his game, it's been huge for him, and that's something that probably won't be a big factor for him at the NHL level. I think that he probably will slot in more as a third-pairing defenseman, but the fact that you know that he can at least rip the puck and that he can make confident plays with the puck in the offensive zone, I think that really helps too.
Yeah, it's just also, it shows he can just move the puck. You need your guys, your high-end guys, the McDavids, the Drysdales, they need the puck in their hands. So you need guys that can get it to them. And if he shows fine playmaking ability in the offensive zone. He shows it can make a breakout pass pretty well. It's just, can he get better, a little more refined in, be a little bit quicker, a little more head scans, make a little bit better decisions. It's just all refinement now. Like, his second NHL season will be fun, I believe.
Yeah, and I think I said this to you on the podcast back in September, when just after the tournament, the prospects tournament, that I could see 5 years down the road the Oilers' right side on the blue line being Bouchard, Akey, and Wanner.
Yeah, that would be, because Akey stepping in would be And especially they'll be on a little bit of cheaper deals too, those two.
Especially if Bouchard's making $9+ million by then. If you can have these two defensemen coming in throughout the organization, first of all, defensemen that you drafted and developed yourself, that's huge. Secondly, both right shot guys. And the fact that they have different skill sets too, like, I mean, Akey is an elite skater, but a little more of a smaller, slender build compared to Wander, who, like you said, even at 6'3", 185, he's going to fill out that frame and be well over 200 pounds. I'm confident in that. We've seen him drop the gloves too, so you know he's got that toughness to him. You know, he's a fellow Saskatchewan guy like myself, so always love to see a few more Sasky guys on the Oilers. And I think that, you know, like Vinny Desharnais is filling in that role admirably right now. And I'd like to see him, you know, have a 5-year career with the Oilers, which would be great for him. As a seventh round pick, he's already beat the odds just by playing one game in the NHL. But the fact that he's now played over 100 NHL games when he didn't debut in the league until he was almost 27 years old, that's huge. And he picked up a multi-point game today too in the Oilers 6-1 win over the Anaheim Ducks, just the second multi-point game of his career. And I think it's fair to say that Wanner is ahead of Desharnais at the same age.
Yeah, 100%. And it's just about that drive, that determination to get better. I love Desharnais too, though. Love it. The thing about Desharnais is he moves the puck. So like, his head
better
checks,
than you'd
his
expect,
head scans.
Right?
Oh, it's crazy the amount of, like, I always think when I watch him, I always think Desharnais, just, he's probably the greatest driver on the road just because his head checks. He scans his shoulders so well, so often on retrievals. It's awesome to watch. He's a player young kids need to watch.
And you know what? Not the quickest or fleetest of foot, but
no.
You know, one thing you'll see, he doesn't get beat wide a ton because, number one, at 6'7", he's already got these massively long pterodactyl arms, but he's got such a long stick too. I think back to that game against the Colorado Avalanche a couple weekends ago, and I think it was Nathan MacKinnon who was trying to drive wide on him, and he just swung his stick out and knocked the puck clean off MacKinnon's blade. And, I mean, you do that to any player in the league, that's a good defensive play. But you do it to one of the most dangerous attackers in the league, it's even more impressive. So, like I said, Desharnais, not maybe the fleetest of foot, but he's a guy who he's not going to get beat wide too many times, especially when he's in good position, just because he's got such a long reach.
Yeah, like, and even his positioning is usually top tier. Like, he's a high sense player. Like, he uses his sense to his ability, and mixed in with that 6'6" frame, it can be a deadly combo.
And how close do you think Wanner is to playing in the NHL?
I think, just like, the Oilers are in win now mode, so I think it's going to be tough for any young player to almost get in a couple of games. You see how tough it is for Lavoie even.
Yeah,
I would say,
and he played 7 this year, but
yeah. I would say maybe another 2 AHL seasons. Just keep refining. I'd like to see him even get a little bit more power play time.
Yeah, and that's, like, you know, I think it would be good to see him get any extra opportunities that he wasn't getting in the past, or just play an elevated role. But at the same time, it's something that he's never going to do at the NHL level. So
yep.
I'm also fine with him playing the type of style down there that he's going to play for the Oilers, because you might as well get him accustomed to the game that he's going to play once he gets to the NHL. And I think it was Lowtide who was also follows the prospects extremely closely. I believe he said on his radio show a while ago that he thinks that Wanner could get in some NHL games as early as next season, maybe later in the year, some similar to around this time when the Oilers are kind of locked up with a spot. Like, Brett Kulak got hurt today, so we're probably going to see Philip Broberg get recalled here soon. Maybe a year from now, that's a situation where Wander gets a look if there's an injury for 2 or 3 games, just to test him out. I don't envision him playing any playoff games or anything like that. But late in the year, you play a game against San Jose or Anaheim or Arizona, one of the weaker teams in the West, and you think this is a good opportunity to give the kid a chance to just test his skills out at the highest level. That's where I think we could see maybe Wander slide in. But as far as a full-time role, I'm with you. I think that it's probably still at least 2 years away before we start talking about that.
Yeah, like even like the progression he's made with the preseason games he's played, just beside Nurse when we were watching him, is just awesome.
Yeah,
that's why I'm excited. Like preseason will tell a lot about how, like, we might see, like, Low Tide could be right. He could be up, and it would be cool. Like, I like when teams do that, where it is like a bottom-ish team and you do have a little bit of leeway, like get some of your young guys some
it's a little experience. Bit of a reward for a good year, and, exactly. And let's just hope that Wander continues to take a step forward. I mentioned he has 15 points in his last 63 games, but a lot of that offense has come in the last month or two. I think he was, if I can find the numbers here, it wasn't quite a point break. I think he had something like 11 points in his last 18 games or something like that, after only getting a few points in his first 30 games of the year. He's really turned it on in the second half. But this, like we said, it's a guy who you're not going to mainly count on offense for, but the fact that he has that little extra ability, I mean, just a great find for the Oilers at 212th overall.
Yeah, just a bet on skating, size. It's a good find. I think it will turn out good for them. He is just getting better and better.
Without a doubt. Well, Spencer, I just want to say thanks again for being on the podcast tonight. Always fun talking to you. Where can people follow you?
Over on, well, not Twitter, but X, I guess, at SP Prospects.
I still call it Twitter. I think I'm always going to call it Twitter. Yeah.
Yeah, like there's no way it's anything but Twitter.
Yeah. So yeah. SP Prospects, everyone, please go give Spencer a follow. Do you have anything in the works for us at heavyhockey.com or any topics you're looking to dig into?
Yes, some James Steffen. I got that one going, a little profile. And then just a bunch of some fun WHL players profiles, like Gavin Hodnett. That one will be coming out.
Spencer, I look forward to reading it. And as the editor for the site, I have the privilege to be the first one to get my eyes on it. So looking forward to doing that. They'll have Dev Camp, obviously, again this summer, and then the Young Stars Classic in September. So let's try to plan a podcast down the road and talk about those two events.
I'm usually at there during Dev Camp for the weekday. So I would love to talk about development camp. It's my favorite.
I think that'll be a good time in July to touch base. And you wrote another post about that, I think, last summer as well, about how the little mini tournament went at the end when they broke the groups into four different teams.
They love the Billy Morse Cup.
Yeah. All right, Spencer, have a good night.
Thanks, Eric. You as well.
So for Spencer Pomody, I'm Eric Friesen. This has been the 99 Forever Podcast. We're out.